see possible.
That's a problem.
It's a lot. You don't have any mascara.
So do you find that's good for the face?
It is.
Well, you can make it. So we have an idea that we just sort of fill this idle moment while we wait for everybody to arrive. Bren, who is the city clerk, has forms for each of you to sign. This is part of your oath-taking process. So we're just going to hand them out, and you can sign them, and then we'll collect them up again, and then we won't have to do it afterwards.
Okay, great.
Do you want to give me the top pass?
Sure. Hello, Mike. Yes.
Yeah, so, Bren, oh, that's Bren, and this is Peter. Where's Peter?
Peter, where are you sitting, Peter?
Nicholas, just have him sign both pages.
Sign both pages, yes.
Okay. And then they can retain one, and I get one.
Okay, so sign both pages and keep one. Doug, was it? Doug, there you go.
And Suzanne.
Sign both and give us one back. Dana.
I saw Charlie on the Rick. Sign them both and give us one back.
Sits later.
Right there.
Yes. Are you missing one?
Mark the setting in the email.
And thank you for reminding me.
Thank you. They want you to do that now.
I think the city deserves it to be part of our. We haven't done it yet. Any ready to hand in? Is it ready? No, do you want to
get everything close?
Yeah, you can keep it. Cool.
Thank you. Any more to hand in?
Do you have to take?
Thank you.
Can you keep one?
Obviously, neither of you.
I tried. Thank
you. So, any more to hand in?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so you get that one.
Perfect, that saves a lot of time, but I think I've got too many, so we might have...
Do you think you have too many?
Yeah. We only need 10 bags. No, I do. 12 bags.
Are they named? Oh,
yeah.
All right. I fail. Just scribble all over it.
Okay, I got 10.
So there are
two
more to go. Come on, who's holding out?
Peter, I was trying to assume your identity.
I think Erica, maybe. I just handed hers.
So is there anybody who I haven't collected from yet? Should have one.
Let's see what
Let me
got.
Mark them off this.
Yes. Is that in here?
Yeah.
So we've got Mike Rotkin.
Okay.
Rick Longinotti.
Got it.
Doug Enfer. Dana Jacobson. Mark Messity Miller. Suzanne Holt. Charlie Cuteman. Sid Slatter. Sarah Manser. David Stearns, David Greenbaskin, and Greg Pepping. Oh!
Erica's over there, so Peter Beckman is who I'm missing.
Peter. Did you give us your thing back?
Yeah, it's right here. You need to sign it. We'll get there.
Thank you.
Okay, I think I got them all.
That's terrific.
That will make such an easy transition.
So, are you ready to roll? Everybody at the committee is, so we could just...
Well, it's... Yeah, but for Brown Act, you have to wait till the time because that's when it...
Oh, we're over time.
What do you
mean? We're supposed to... That's wrong.
Oh, okay. Well, if it's...
It's 5:40-something. It's 5:44. We're 15 minutes. We're on Sanford this time.
Oh.
So, when you're ready...
Process to assist the City Council and future generations of Santa Cruzans. I mean, this is so, you're at this pivotal point for us right now. We're in this one together, but your work is so crucial. It's not a light issue, as all of us know, but one of fundamental importance to us today and into our future. And with far-reaching consequences for the entire community and beyond just the City of Santa Cruz. We really mean the community of Santa Cruz. So your work will have an impact, and I trust you all approach it with just the seriousness and the open-mindedness and the curiosity and the collaboration that it requires to do your job really well. And finally, I truly do understand your participation represents a personal cost and a really time-intensive personal cost to both you and to your families. So on behalf of City Council, I really want to thank you for taking up this work. We really, really value your commitment, and we all know what it means because we are all in those positions as well. It takes so much of your time and energy, but it's for something really bigger than all of us together. It's something that means something for the entire city and the community, and I really want to give you gratitude on behalf of the entire council and city staff as well. So next I want to say a few words about why we are here today and conclude with your charge as was formulated by the City Council. Because not only is it why we are here, but the significance of the situation we find ourselves in right now. We have to change our water policies. Santa Cruz cannot continue with the status quo. Tomorrow's implementation, May 1st, of our water rationing is a stark lesson in our vulnerability of what's happening with our water supplies currently. So if we fail to change, or if we fail to change sufficiently, water shortages will be experienced more frequently, and the severity will be at least as great that we're experiencing right now this year, if not greater. And I think we all are very aware of that. And the question of what to do, really, we've seen it's really been dividing the community and the city. And we're at this pivotal point right now. So this committee is working on recommendations that will truly refocus Santa Cruz. That's part of why we need to go this route. I think a lot of people who had some questions about why are you doing it through a committee like this, I think if they take the time and participate as members of the audience or learn and sit with what will be happening with all of you, we'll really discover that this is really essentially what we need to do at this point in time. Because it's not just about the gallons per day that we're talking about right now, but it's about who we are as a community and how we move forward with understanding our vulnerability around water, but how we together move forward and create a sustainable water future for ourselves. So the committee's charge really comes out of the City Council outline from our November 26, 2013 meeting. It already feels like time's passing because here we are in April of 2014. But the overarching outcome is to develop water supply strategy recommendations from you, the committee, for City Council consideration. And to do that, you'll be using iterative fact-based processes. You'll be achieving specific milestones along the way and truly be a clearinghouse for viable solutions. I think that's one of the things that's really important from our perspective. The issues that the recommendations must resolve is a water supply that's safe, adequate, reliable, environmentally sustainable, and that takes into account both the water demand and future threats. These are all very, very critical in terms of what you do with your work. So the council has granted 12 months for this work, and that's a big charge for you guys to do, and that's a huge commitment that we're very grateful you're doing. There's infinite work that could be done, but we know the committee will need to work efficiently and at the appropriate depth to honestly get it done in that span of time. For some people, they think it could be done shorter. Why is it going to take so long? But it really does take time to get to where we need you to be, which is my next couple comments. The committee is also at the crux of a greater community outreach and engagement effort, so we need all facets of the community to be paying attention to this work, and I truly hope that that happens. I'm personally going to try to attend as many meetings as I can, so if I can find the time, I will be in the audience learning and hearing and partaking of everything I see the committee do, because I'll learn along the way. The way your committee will have the most impact on the future of Santa Cruz will be to give the council policy recommendation that truly best satisfies all of you. So collaboratively together with really an open-mindedness working with each other to find that solution for us that you can give a recommendation. That's the charge and that's the hope I get. I hope that you can accomplish in the next 12 months. And with that, I really honestly truly want to give you my gratitude and thank you and truly wish you the best of luck. This is kind of the launch. Our City Council truly looks forward to your milestone reports and hearing back from you, because that will be happening along the way as well. So with that, I will turn it over to our city clerk, Bryn Lair, who will administer the committee's oath of office. And at this time, I'd like to ask the committee members to please stand and join Bryn for your oath.
Thank you, Mayor. So I'm going to administer your oaths of office simultaneously. So if you could all please raise your right hand and repeat after me. I, please state your name.
I, John Stevens.
Do solemnly swear or affirm, that I will support and defend, the Constitution of the United States, and the Constitution of the State of California, against all enemies, foreign and domestic, that I will bear true faith and allegiance. To the Constitution of the United States, and the Constitution of the State of California,
That I will take this obligation freely.
That I will take this obligation freely.
Without any mental reservation.
Without any mental reservation.
Or purpose of evasion.
And
that I will well and faithfully. Discharge the duties upon which. I am about to enter. Congratulations. You're official. Thank you, Brandon. Thank you, committee members. You are official now. I love that. And so now at this stage of the meeting, I'm going to step aside and stay as long as I can and really listen and watch you launch. And I'm going to pass the baton over to Nicholas Duar and Carrie Fox. They are incredible facilitators to lead the remainder of the meeting. Good luck.
Thank you.
Thank you, Matt.
Thank you.
So, it's official. I've introduced myself to, I think, everybody here, almost everybody in the room. I think almost everybody's met Carrie Fox, my co-facilitator. We're going to get to know each other really well. So, the first thing we're going to do is introduce ourselves. What I'd like each of you to do is to just, you can start at one end and work around, say who you are, say what interests you about this. Try and put a really, get as Pollyanna-ish as you like. You know, we want to hear the best possible spin on why you're here and what you hope to get to accomplish as a member of this committee. Who would like to, which way should we go? Should we go here or from here? Do you want to start, Mark?
Sure. I'm Mark Massini Miller. I run a little consulting and engineering firm in Santa Cruz. I'm here to represent the Chamber of Commerce. I sit on the board of directors for the Chamber of Commerce and am interested in finding a solution that works well for our community and supports an economic vitality that will provide for the future needs of our children, our grandchildren, and the community at large.
Thank you, Mark.
I'm Peter Beckman. I'm Beckman's Bakery, and also here on behalf of Nicholas the First. I'm one of the co-chairs. And I lived here for 30 years now. And I'm interested in Santa Cruz as my home, to also be the home of future generations. And in that respect, helping to work on a water supply that's sustainable and in the spirit of Santa Cruz, actually, so to express what we are and
My name is Erica Stanovich, and I am representing the Sierra Club. And in that, I want to defend our environment as much as possible. I want to make sure our fish get the water they need. And I also want to make sure that it is here for generations to come. I also want to make Santa Cruz my home for quite a while. So.
My name is David Stearns. Worked for Altera Solar, but I'm here representing the City Water Commission. It's unfortunate my colleague David Baskin cannot join us this evening, but we're here to serve as a liaison back and forth. We're thrilled to have more voices, very informed voices, joining in the deliberations. And, not to reiterate too much, but, we're here to come up with a sustainable and adequate supply for current residents and for future generations. So.
Thank you, David.
I'm Danny Jacobson. I'm one of the three citizen members. I've been living in Santa Cruz about 12 years now, and about that whole time I've been working in the water supply plant and field, either for the Santa Clara Valley Water District or California Water Service Company. And mostly what I want to get out of this is obviously I want it to be productive. I want to have a recommendation that's actually implemented and followed. And the reason I'm excited about this process is because it'll help me. I'm hoping that we can think a little bit more outside of the box than you can when you for me, working for different agencies, you're always working within those constraints. And, you kind of get pushed in different ways. So I think this venue provides an opportunity to kind of expand our thinking and to touch on issues that we might not be able to work in, for a regular water department, municipal agency.
Thanks, Ben. Sam.
I'm Sarah Manser. I'm the co-chair of the Surfrider Foundation, the Santa Cruz chapter here. I'm also working to, I hope we can collaborate and come up with some great solutions for sustainable and supply for us and future generations and everyone else that's going to be here. So look forward to it. I'm excited about this.
My name is Sue Holt. I'm an environmental economist retired from teaching at Cabrillo, where I taught the environmental science class with two partners for 14 years. And in that role, I took care of the human behavior and the public policy side of the course. And I enjoyed teaching about how different communities find ways to protect their natural resources, because there isn't a community that isn't protecting some natural resource. And this is like a wonderful opportunity to share the things I've learned and to find ways to collaborate to serve our common interests while we have a sustainable water supply as the outcome.
Sid Slater, I'm a local general contractor here, born and raised in Santa Cruz, in fact, fourth generation in Santa Cruz. I'm here representing the Santa Cruz County Business Council, we are pro-water and want to find a solution. I think this is not something we want to saddle our children with. We support the economic vitality portion of this, how it affects businesses without water, and we need to find a solution.
My name is Charlie Kitman. I own a retail business in town. We'll plug the gardening company over here in the west side. Been here for 28 years. My wife and I have owned and operated it. And I first joined the Water Commission probably 26 years ago when I was frustrated with the fact that water is more of a political issue than it was an issue of climate or hydrology or anything else. And frustrated to find us in the same situation that we were 20-something years ago today. Interested in preserving water for fish, but just as interested in having water for people and a sustainable, reliable water supply for continued health of the community, lifestyle, business.
I'm Mike Rotkin. I served 26 years on the Santa Cruz City Council and 5 terms as mayor. This community's done an amazing job of addressing the issue of conservation. We're at 6% of the lowest water use of cities of our size in the state, and about a half the state average. But turns out that by itself is still not enough to address the potential water needs of the community and the wildlife. And so the issue is, what can we do now to try and address that gap between what we have now and what we might need? The city went through about a 20-year process to come up with a solution, and despite best intentions, did not bring the public along with them. And in the end, you know, that was a non-starting, not acceptable solution. So we're here, I think, to start again and try and figure out what can we do to address the difference between the water supply we have now and the need that's, even with all that conservation that the people still have expressed. We're fortunate, I think, in not having to redo every scientific study about some factual information, but I don't think we can have any assumption about anything else about what, you know, we know or don't know about the system and what our alternatives might be. So I think I hope it will be a very open process and serious investigation of these options to see if they actually make a difference and what solution or combination of solutions actually will work in our community.
I'm Rick Bonginani, and I'm representing Santa Cruz Desal Alternatives in this group. I'm a marriage and family therapist and kind of looking for ways for people to get along in that professional role. And so I'm eager to learn from this process. I'm hopeful about our ability to come up with solutions for Santa Cruz water supply. And also, I think this could be a great model for other issues in the community. You know, Lord knows we have other contentious issues, so we do this well. I think that'll be a service to the community as well. I'm really glad to be here with all of you, because one of my frustrations is that in the past 4 years of actually asking the city to do this very thing that we're doing, is that I didn't feel like, you know, I had that kind of ability to dialogue, you know, the ability for people to really understand where I was coming from. So a lot of kind of motivations got imputed to me. You know, oh, he's the no-growth guy, for example. And so I'm really glad for the chance for a conversation to take place, which is really what kind of breaks down those sort of ideological barriers and allows people to find common ground.
Hi, my name's Doug. Doug Angfer. Like I said, a long time, family's been in the area for a long time. I'm fifth generation Central Coast native and an entrepreneur from a long line of entrepreneurs. I've started, built, and sold a couple of technology-based businesses that were here in the area. I guess I'd also call myself an environmental steward, having been, I think, raised with the right values that way. I remember asking my mom what our family politics were when I was a kid, and she said, well, we're conservative conservationalists. And learned how to live on the land and with the land at an early age. I got to say I'm humbled and energized and at bottom optimistic about the enterprise here. I really respect and thank the council for putting together such a great group. I think they chose us because of our individual and collective judgment and open-mindedness. And I was gratified with the initial exercise you all had us enter into with respect to the consideration of the potential technical support via consultants. The guest to think about interests versus positions, which is really sort of what we have to do here together, right? We're going to come with interests and values. We're going to collect and review some facts that presumably we can agree on through the lens of those interests. And then I think as a group, collectively reach a position that meets all the criteria that Lynn outlined, safe and reliable, sustainable, affordable, politically viable. I fully expect that we're going to do this in an intellectually honest way and that each of us is going to have an opportunity to change our minds as we're exposed to facts that maybe we haven't been exposed to before. And I'm looking forward to that process.
Thank you, Doug. I realize that I should have said a few words about myself. Hopefully Karen wants to say a few words about herself as well. So my name is Nicholas Dewar. I've lived in California since 1980. Came here to go to school and got married, got my green card, stayed. I've been working in collaborative processes since the mid-80s. I've worked in public policy and collaborative processes like this since about 11, 12 years ago. I had an opportunity between the two of us, Carrie and I, have spoken at length with every member of the committee. And I'm really optimistic. I'm quite charged up about this. I know that it's not going to be easy. I mean, that's understating it. It is not going to be easy. But I'm also very charged up about the perspectives that we've heard from you and I'm optimistic about the outcome of this. I think that you really have what it takes to take this to a conclusion that will be really useful and will, I hope, make it into policy. So I'm really glad to be here. Do you want to say
something? I have a good feeling about this. That's what I wanted.
All right. So thank you all for sharing that with us all. Next up is the Brown Act. Do we have them? Oh, he's great. Welcome.
Hi.
John Barrisone.
Correct. Right.
For you who haven't met me, I'm John Barrisone. I'm a city attorney. I've been the city attorney for Santa Cruz. I had the honor and pleasure of being a lawyer for the city since about 1990, a city attorney, in 1987 as a deputy city attorney. I know we have planning commissioners, we have water commissioners, we have former council members on the task force. Has anybody else had the experience of sitting on a legislative body that has that term defined by the Brown Act? What was that?
Faculty Senate of Cabrillo.
Okay. So, you, although you're not going to be making laws or issuing decrees, you're going to be an advisory body, but for purposes of the Brown Act, you are considered a legislative body because you were appointed by the City Council to give advice to the City Council, and the City Council will ultimately rely on your advice, presumably, in deciding or not to decide certain how issues are going to be resolved, and they'll be taking legislative action in that regard. So, as a legislative body is defined by the Brown Act, you're subject to the provisions of the Brown Act. And the essential premise of the Brown Act is that you're conducting the public's business So the public ought to be able to observe you conducting its business. It's a transparency, sunshine statute, which basically means that everything you do as a collective body, everything you deliberate on and decide has to be made at a public meeting in the presence of the public, and the public has to have notice that you're going to be considering the items that you discuss at a meeting by virtue of the fact that everything you discuss at a meeting is going to be listed on a posted agenda. And if a subject or a topic is not posted on the agenda, you don't have the legal authority to discuss that issue because the public who might have been interested weren't notified that you were going to be discussing that. So that is the basic premise. When you have a regular meeting, as you're in here tonight, this is a regular meeting of the water advisor, the task force, this water supply task force. The agenda has to be posted 72 hours in advance, and that's the case here. And everything you're going to discuss over this next three-night period or three-day period will have been, the public will have been notified by that, by what's on the posted agenda. Also, another premise of the Brown Act is that if you're going to be conducting the public's business, you have to listen to the public. In other words, they get to weigh in on your decision-making process by offering oral commentary at your meetings. And so every meeting that you have, if it's a regular meeting, you have to set aside some time for members of the public to comment to you on issues within your subject matter jurisdiction. In other words, your folks are talking about water supply. So any aspect of water supply is fair game for a member of the public to talk to you at oral communications. Somebody wants to come here and talk to you about problems in downtown Santa Cruz or social issues or needles or any of the other issues we talk about, that's outside your subject matter jurisdiction, and that's not within their rights to give in oral communications. And that right to talk to you about items on your subject matter jurisdiction is not limited by whether or not that particular topic's on the agenda that night. While you're limited to discussing matters on the agenda, the public's not, as long as it's within the subject matter jurisdiction. What you can't do is if something's not on the posted agenda and a member of the public comes up and asks you to do something, you can't take action on it that night. What you'd have to do is if you're interested in that comment or pursuing that idea, put it on your next agenda so other members of the public know you're going to be talking about it and you're free to discuss it. Let's see here. I've talked about the agenda. You can have special meetings. A regular meeting requires a 72 hours advance notice, published agenda. If for some reason you have to have a special meeting, you can do that with a 24 hours notice. So the agenda only has to be published 24 hours in advance. I don't anticipate that type of thing happening in this particular setting, because you're not going to have issues that come up that need your attention immediately. You're more of a, you know, a deliberative body, and you're going to be taking things into consideration as they come forward. But that is a provision of the Brown Act, that you can have a special meeting on 24 hours notice if necessary. I've already mentioned the fact that you cannot conduct business. It's not referenced on the agenda. Now, the Brown Act also allows for closed sessions, but that's never, a closed session is an exception to the open meeting requirement, where the legislative body has the ability to meet behind closed doors. But that is never, I don't believe, ever going to affect this task force, because you're only entitled to do it to discuss pending litigation, which you have no authority over from your charge from the city council. Personnel matters, you're not, you don't have any personnel responsibilities for the city of Santa Cruz. Labor negotiations, you don't have any labor negotiations. So while there is a closed session provision that allows you to meet outside of the public arena, None of those exceptions are ever going to apply to this task force. So you should just assume that everything you do as a task force is going to be done in public pursuant to a posted agenda. The real important aspect that you should bear in mind is that a meeting of the task force takes place anytime a quorum of the task force gets together. So I understand that you're going to decide how many members of your commission constitutes a quorum. You have 14. I would presume that you want to have at least a majority of your members present to constitute a quorum of your meeting. So assuming, just for the sake of my examples, that the quorum of the task force is 8 members. Anytime 8 members get together to discuss water supply business, you're conducting a meeting. And if you're not doing that in public, and you're not doing it with a posted agenda, you're violating the Brown Act. And the law has a problem historically that it always has to try to catch up with technology. Technology outpaces the law's ability to stay up with it. And in this particular context, the real villain is email, okay? And the reason why is that you are conducting a meeting whenever you have a discussion of a quorum of the board. So whenever any ideas are exchanged, and it's about water supply business, you're in the midst of a meeting if there's 8 people involved. So if, for example, Mike has his computer at home, and in the middle of the night he comes up with a great idea, and he's got everybody, you know, he's got you all on one email, and he sends out this, I think we ought to talk about this at the next meeting. And Charlie says, that's a good idea, and hits reply all, you've just violated the Brown Act. So I really, really encourage the officials that I advise to try to minimize their communications by email, just simply because it can be an unwary, you just can just inadvertently, you know, by pushing the wrong button, you can commit a violation of the Brown Act. And essentially, in this particular context, unless it's a willful violation, the ramifications are that if you'd have to be, you're put on notice that a citizen will put you on notice that he or she believes you violated the Brown Act, and you'll have to have a conversation with me. And if there's an argument that you did violate the Brown Act, then what you have to do is remedy that violation by agendizing the item, having the discussion in open session, and reconsidering the item in that fashion. If you willingly violate the Brown Act, then you're subject to prosecution, you know, under the criminal statutes of the state of California. So I think that is the biggest trap for the unwary is the email situation. And the serial meeting situation, you know, you may decide that you do want to have a conversation, a sidebar conversation outside the public meeting context with 2 or 3 of your fellow commissioners or task force members. And, you know, if Rick meets with these 3 people, and then you think that that might be a good idea, but you like to check it out with so-and-so, even though Rick hasn't communicated with Mark, if Mark ultimately becomes part of that conversation in a daisy chain fashion, you also have a violation of the Brown Act. So to the extent that you ever do feel it's necessary to get together with 1 or 2 fellow members, I think you really need to make a pact among yourselves that, you know, we had this conversation, but we're not going to have the same conversation or discuss the same topic with other board members because it has the possibility of creating an embarrassing violation of the board. Those are the basic premises. If you have any questions, I always encourage people with questions to call me at my office. I'm available to answer questions, and I'm happy to do so. I'd rather have people ask questions than wonder about what they're, whether they can do this or not do this. And it's not unusual for board members, commissioners, and council members to call me with questions, and that's what I'm there for. So please feel free to do that if you ever have the need to do so. Does anybody have any questions for me now? Mark?
I have one. Will conflicts of interest arise in our work here? Do you see that as a potential problem?
Yeah, I do. It depends on what you do. I know you're an engineer, and to the extent that, you know, any of your work, for example, would require, say you were a hydrologist, and the board, the commission was pursuing an idea, but it required a hydrological study, you know, focused hydrological study, so you could get the data necessary to decide whether this is a good idea or a bad idea. And your firm was interested in bidding on that contract. You know, at a certain point in time, because you have a financial interest in the outcome of that decision, whether to recommend to get the hydrological study that your firm would be applying for, you might have a conflict of interest. There's three types of conflicts of interest. I wasn't here to talk about that tonight, but there's contractual conflicts of interest. You can't enter into contracts with the city of Santa Cruz if you're a board member or a commissioner. That's under Government Code Section 1090. There's financial conflicts of interest where it's reasonably foreseeable that a decision or recommendation may have a material financial impact on you or a source of income to you or your property. You have to stay away from those decisions. And it reasonably foreseeable means that I think it's a $250 threshold within the next 12 months or the prior 12 months or something of that nature.
However, if our financial interest, say in property, is shared by everybody.
Right, that public generally.
Up if we have water and down if we don't have water,
right.
But that's not a conflict.
No, because there's an exception called the public generally exception. So, again, conflict of interest, I think what you need to do is just, if you have any questions at all, call me. Because every one of those decisions and analyses are going to be fact intensive, and I need to ask questions to understand your particular circumstance and then apply the regulations and statutes to that in order to offer you an opinion. But that's what I'm there for, so please feel free to call me on that.
Thank you.
John, I have a question.
Sure.
In your hypothetical, was it Mike or Charlie who would react?
Probably Mike. You know,
okay,
I've been a lawyer for a long time, so I know his predilection.
Yeah. So it was the original Sam.
Well, the email to reply all. As soon as there's been he could send a blast out to everybody and say, don't forget our meeting next Friday. But there's been no dialogue at that particular point in time. As soon as the reply all button's gotten hit, then you start talking about yourselves.
Okay. Second question just had to do with, and I think you've been clear about this, but again, I want to make sure I understood it. You said if eight or more of us were together talking about water.
Yeah, if eight's a quorum.
If eight's a quorum. If we happen to be in the same room at some social event and we studiously avoid talking about water issues, that's okay.
But yeah, that's not a meeting.
Although I'll give you some advice. When eight people from this group get in a room, you think you're not going to talk about water stuff? So in my experience in the council, when four council members found themselves at a party, one of us left because you just find yourself falling into these conversations. You didn't mean to talk about policy, but there it is. So I would say generally avoid situations where eight of you are in the same room and actually talk to each other. And you might be in the same room on the other side of the party, that's different. But once the conversation starts, it's very easy to slip into a conversation about inappropriate things.
Yeah. The other thing you can't use is intermediaries to exchange ideas. So you can't ask Rosemary to poll the task force to see what they think about this idea and report back to you. That's another no-no.
Well, do you want to expound? That's kind of almost a serial meeting, right? I mean,
Correct. It's just a form of a daisy chain meeting. You know, you can either do it among yourselves, or you can ask a staff member who's not part of the task force to poll a board and see, you know, if this idea has legs and report back. And that's a violation of the Brown Act as well.
Thank you.
All righty.
That was really clear. Thanks.
Well, that was interesting, wasn't it? So, we're going to review the agenda next. We're going to spend about maybe as long as half an hour on this, because we're not just going to review the agenda, but we're going to start looking at the dialogue map, which are on the walls around us, and also consider the assessment that Carrie and I conducted.
Am I correct that the agenda is not in this book? It's what you mailed us, what you emailed us earlier.
You know, I don't
think
the agenda.
It's in there.
Can you just describe where it is so we can find it?
I thought it was.
You got it? Does everybody have it?
It's in there. It's in the middle of the stuff.
Great.
I have a look.
So we want to go through this and make sure that it makes sense to you. As John was saying, there are some constraints that we have on moving stuff around, but while he's here, he's still here. He's outside. We call him back in and see if we can move, how much we can move things around. But so tonight, we're going
to...
You
can totally move things around in the agenda.
Oh, good. Great.
As long as it's posted, that's what we're talking about.
All right. So we're going to talk about the work that Carrie and I have done so far to sort of get you up to the same speed that we're at, and maybe even change the perspective that we have or the perceptions that we have to correct us. There'll be an opportunity for the members of the public who are here to also get involved in that by... first of all, we'll have a public comment moment, and then we'll have some opportunity for you, all of you, to add things to the dialogue maps, and we'll explain how they work so you can be effective doing that. And then we'll take a break. At the moment, we started about 15 minutes late. We made up about 5 minutes with John's help, and so we may not finish exactly on time. Maybe we may need to take advantage of those minutes that we lost at the beginning and stick them on at the end. But
we're not going to do that regularly. We're going to start on time and we're going to end on time.
Yeah. Thank you. Which is why I stood up early on, remember, and said, hey, it's 5:30. I'm making a special exception today. And I was told right away, hey, this is Santa Cruz. but the reality is, you know, we want to be fair to everybody. Those people who show up on time, we want to be fair to you. So we want to get going. So we're going to try really hard to change you. Good luck with that, right? Tonight, the agenda review, review the dialogue maps, get us all up on to speed on what we've done in the last month or so. The substantial part of tonight is going to be getting into the charter, your charter. We'll take a few minutes at the end of the meeting, just at the end of the session, just to make sure that we kind of know what the loose ends are so that we can carry that over to tomorrow. And then for tomorrow, we're going to start out with the dialogue maps again, just to sort of freshen that up. Only for 10 minutes or so, and then get back into the charter again. So tomorrow will essentially be charter from wall to wall. That's Thursday. And that's another evening meeting. Then Friday, it's an afternoon meeting, and we have... there are two items that are really... the problem statement is, again, part of the charter. It's really the first section of the charter. We want to talk about your interest for selecting the expert. So this is the way that we want to start in on the discussion of the selection of the expert. Then we want to talk about the committee's work plan. Then we want to talk about the agenda setting. for May. So that your next meeting will be, we think, we expect it to be late in the month of May. We want to make sure that you've set the agenda for that. But Carrie and I are not setting the agendas. We're going to help you do, but it's your agenda. And then right at the end, we're going to have a meeting evaluation. And as you, we will always do at the end of meetings. We want to know how the meeting went. So at the end of every meeting, which doesn't take long, but we want to have 5 minutes to just know, well, what worked, what didn't work, what do we need to do better next time, what should we cut out, what should we, you know, that kind of stuff. The public comment, well, right at the end, you probably noticed, there is oral communication. So that is the, that's on Friday. So that's where members of the public can tell the committee whatever they want to say about the water issues that the committee is working on. And today, in a few minutes, we're going to have a public comment period when anybody in the public can say whatever they want to say about the things that are on the agenda for the three sessions of this meeting. So how does that look? Let's talk about the agenda, see if there are any questions about it.
Questions?
Yes.
If we, you know, if we get through, like, say, tomorrow's agenda, and Friday looks like a big agenda, and tomorrow's agenda looks small, if we get through it tomorrow, can we start moving on to Friday's agenda?
I'm sure we can. Let me just say one thing. This, the work that you're doing in these three sessions, we expect you to take between 9 and 12 hours. That's without the selection of expert issue. So, which sort of appeared later, after we scheduled all of this. So we're really under the gun. And we're going to have to figure out some ways to sort of somehow do this in 9 hours of meeting. So we have a ton to do. And we will need to be agile. As you say, if we get a little bit done on, ahead of time, then we can, well, definitely.
If something is agendized for Friday, can we really move it forward to
Thursday? It's on both days. I have that same thought. The same topic appears on both days, and therefore it shouldn't be a problem.
Good.
if it didn't, then we would have that problem.
It's technically one meeting, I think. So it's sessions, serial sessions in a single meeting. So we should maybe consult John if there's any doubt about it. But it's definitely something we have. I mean, if we go, this is sort of a little constrained, but we will do the best we can. Other questions? Then let's move on. Are we ready to move on? We've finished talking about the agenda. Let's introduce the dialogue mats. So these dialogue mats, these are printouts from software, from a really neat software program. Who has been able to visit the website where these are hanging? So a lot of you have. It's much easier to see them on a web page than it is on a piece of paper. That's what these lines are about. on the web, this is down here, and it's really easy. You just scroll down and you find it. You'll see, if you look at these, for example, just look at this one as an example. There's normally a question at the sort of somewhere up near the left. This one is, what are the issues that might be addressed in the charter? So this is all about the charter. We should write charter, right? But anyway. And in answer to that question, there are these little light bulbs, which are answers to the question. And then there are more questions. And then answers, and then more questions, and then answers. And so it goes, and here's one, here's a question, and here's an answer, and then down here, there's a little green, it's a plus sign. So this is an agreement with this answer. It's saying, oh yeah, that's a good idea, and here's why. And there's, I don't know whether that was an example, but you can also have a little red negative, which is, hey, wait a minute, this doesn't sound so good to me, and here's why. So we compiled these based on the comments that we got from the people that we interviewed. Mainly, the interviews were from the members of the committee. We also interviewed members of the staff of the city. We interviewed members of the council. And we interviewed other people as well who have a specific, special sort of attachment to this process. And we condensed from those comments this. This is like seeing a conversation of 25 people sort of crystallized on paper. And there's more on the website. This is just, we took the ones that we thought were going to be most germane this evening. What we've also got here are, you can see over there, little yellow posters. What we want, what we hope is that in a few minutes, you'll be able to, it'll be color-coded. So we're going to use one color of pen for members of the committee and another color of pen for members of the public, so that you can take a post-it and essentially add a question or a comment or an answer or, you know, a little plus thing like, I agree with that, or a negative, and add it in. We hope you do. This, from our perspective, although I don't think it's sort of an official public comment period, but it's really important for us. It's a useful opportunity to gather public comment as well as gathering input from the committee. So, do you have any questions about that?
Just a quick point.
Yes.
Were we supposed to go to public comment prior to diving into this?
No. Oh, we're going there. That's, we're going there next. We're doing a gender review, which was, and as you'll see, part of it is the introduction to the dialogue maps. Let me check the time. The clock on the wall, of course, is stuck at 4:15, which is... So, we're about... I think we're about ready to move on, unless there are more questions about this. So, here's what we're going to do. We've got a public comment 10-minute moment here.
Were we going to have the dialogue mapping and then have the public comment as part of that?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So we got a 10-minute public comment moment. We need to be able to take public comments, but we don't want to sort of delay you starting out on the dialogue maps if you really want to start out on the dialogue maps. So if you want to start on the dialogue maps, oh, we should tell you the color code.
It's black for the public and blue for the committee.
Black for the public and blue for the committee. Can you dig out some things? So if you want to start on the dialogue maps, you can, as long as you do it in complete silence while we get public comment. Does that make sense? So we're going to do 10 minutes of public comment if you need it. You can start doing the dialogue mapping as soon as you like. When the 10 minutes of the public comment period is over, we're going to take a break. And the break will be a 20-minute break. And it's plenty of time for your break. The restrooms are out there. The sparkling apple juice to celebrate the beginning of this wonderful task is over there. And the dialogue maps are all around us. So you can go to town on the dialogue maps during the break as well. We hope you will. And we'll call you back when the break is over. So let's begin the... first of all, questions. Any questions about this? Then let's begin the public comment. And if you want to start on the dialogue map, do it really quietly. Any public comment? So first of all, maybe you could just tell me if you intend to make public comment. 1, 2, 3, 4. So we got 10 minutes, that's fine. Take 2.5 or 3 minutes and we'll be fine. Go ahead, sir.
Paul Brads, good evening. I have a commitment, so I need to leave, and I'm not prepared to make my full public comment tonight. But in light of that, I did send out a letter earlier in the week regarding the issue of consultant selection. May I ask, was that distributed to the committee members?
I believe it was. Did the committee members get an email? It was an email, right?
Correct.
From Mr. Gratz?
I think so. I sent it directly to the facilitators.
Gosh. I know that I didn't forward it.
Well, let the record show that I'm I'm stating tonight that I submitted that, and I would like it distributed.
We can
part of my public comment. Thank you.
Thank you.
Consider it done.
Yeah. Who's up next? Who would like to go next? You, sir, and then you.
All right. Do you want us to introduce names?
Sure, if you wish.
Dan Speltz, water user in the service area outside the city. Two points that I'd like to just have out for consideration. Number one, the use of the word sustainability. I hope that you'll embrace looking at both a short term within five, you know, a water supply within 5 or 10 or 20 years, but I hope you'll also embrace concern for the long term, 40, 60, 80 years out and beyond. And second of all, I appreciate the importance of economic vitality, but I hope that the full committee will embrace the link between economic vitality and ecological vitality, that human economic activity is profoundly and inescapably linked to nature and the vitality of natural systems.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks.
Well, comrades, I appreciate everything that's going on tonight, and the only issue, I'm not hearing speakers well that are facing you.
Yeah.
There's a way you get some kind of amplification or some way the sound system to be improved. This is my request.
Thank you. Maybe you could tell us that at the end as well when we're doing the if you're still here, when we're doing the assessment of the meeting. That would be very helpful.
Just in the beginning, the speaker, the panelists, rather the committee members that are facing you, we're not hearing back here.
I get it. Thank you so much. Yes, sir.
This is a procedural question only, and I'm probably confused. I understand that during the process of this, the members will be required to either take a vote or decide any particular issue by consensus. Before that is done, will there be a provision for public comment as to that issue?
Now is the moment. Because we're going to be talking about the decision-making process.
Yes.
So we're going to be talking about that after the break. So now is the moment for your comment about that, if you wish.
You think we should, after the...
What's the answer?
Do you want to make a comment about the decision-making process?
Yes, I want
then
to know.
Then make it now.
That's what I thought I was doing, sorry. The question is, there's a place for public comment at the beginning and end of each agenda. But during the process, there will be a lot of decisions made by the committee. Mm-hmm. And normally, the public has a right to comment on the issues specifically to be decided at that time. Is that going to be the policy?
What we had thought we would be able to do is to have a moment like this when you and others in the members of the public would be able to address whatever was going to be discussed as the meeting went forward. But it wasn't our intention to have a general discussion of everybody in the room over every point that the committee is working on.
Yeah, that doesn't make sense because a lot of times during when a specific topic is discussed, new factors come out and the public should have a right to comment on that before the committee votes on it. I thought that was what the Brown Act required.
My understanding of the Brown Act is that it requires that there be an opportunity like this before the decisions are made about the issues that are listed on the agenda. I don't believe that the Brown Act requires a moment at every at sort of intervals during the meeting for that kind of public comment. I'll find out if we're required to do it. I would like to do it if it's possible to do it, but the reality is that the committee is going to have a tremendously tough time just talking among themselves and getting it done in 12 months. So my concern will be that if we make it a broader conversation, we'll just end up in the weeds right away. Yes, sir.
We obviously would like us to have maximum opportunity for people to comment on the ongoing discussion. The way the city council handles that is, let's take, for example, today's meeting. We're going to talk about the charter, which is our structure and how we decide things and so forth. you can't have public comment on each, because there's 50 items to talk about or something about that question. So we're not going to get public input on each one of those 50. But we would discuss point one, point two, point three. You would hear us where the consensus seemed to be going, what people were agreeing to. My view is that before you make the final decision, this will be our charter, this is how we're going to structure ourselves, that would be a moment when you would ask the public, what about all these 50 conversations? Because 49 of them nobody wants to comment on, but there's one that's controversial. People would have a right to stand up at that point. So, but that's just my view. But that's the discussion we're going to have, and I'm going to translate your comment to be, you want us to have, you asked the question, what are we going to do? He can't answer that. We're going to have a discussion about that in this group, and we'll take your input on that, which is, you'd like us to maximize your input. We'll take that under consideration.
So what my question was, before there is a consensus or a vote of the committee on any given issue, that would be the charter, for instance, as a whole, because that's probably the first one to take a vote, the public should have a comment. And that's exactly what we said. That's fine with me.
Thank you very much. We have a couple of minutes left of this. Were there any other comments? Yes?
My name is Stephen Stewart. I've been a resident of Santa Cruz on the west side for 34 years, not far from where we are right now. I'd like to encourage this committee to do as much outreach to the public as soon as possible at the beginning. You all saw what happened at the desal plant. You got plenty of comment right at the end of that process. I'd like to see a really concerted effort to do a lot of brainstorming sessions. And in the brainstorming sessions that I'm familiar with, it's non-judgmental idea gathering, where you take information in and you don't shut people down by bringing them in. We've got 60,000 people in here. You might get 59,997 stupid ideas, but you might get three good ideas that solve your problem. So I'd like to encourage you to publicize these events as much as possible, get the public involved as much as possible early on, rather than go for a year and then tell them what you found, because you're going to run into the same kind of situation that they did with the desal, which is a lot of opposition, a lot of doubt, particularly if you come back to that same decision.
Thank you very much. So now we can take a break and at the same time go to town on the dialogue maps. We'll take 20 minutes. It's now.
And while you get out your watch, I'm going to make a pitch for writing on, because that is another way that you can have input. For instance, this map here is specifically about the charter. If you have feelings about what the charter should contain and how the decision process should take place, add to the map, because we're going to talk about that with the committee when you do.
So we'll reconvene at 7:05. Meantime, get to work on the dialogue mats. Carrie and I are going to be sort of drifting around. If you need any help, if you have any questions, ask us. And we'll, as we reconvene, we'll just sort of have a look and see what people put up on the mats and see if we have any questions about that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, we'll be in touch there.
Yeah, I just saw the conversation. Yeah, I got a power.
We're going to reassemble in 5 minutes. So have a look at the map in front of you and think about patterns that you see of new information. Think about patterns that you see of new information. Discussing for a moment about what you think has been added to the dialogue maps that was particularly interesting to you. So as you were walking around or studying the maps, what do you see that you'd like to kind of report back to the rest of the committee, or maybe question the rest of the committee about?
I'll just say I thought the tone of the comments was positive and not. I didn't read anything where somebody sounded like they were going off the rails. Which I don't take for granted.
Right. Thank you. Johnny.
Well, the recurring theme I see up there is one of communication and the importance of communication to the public between the power committee and the water commission, council, but the idea of soliciting input, providing input, exchange of ideas, and communicating with the public about what's going on. So mm-hmm. it came up time after time, comments, is communication.
Thank you. Thank you, John. Other things that you noticed on the...
Having had very little time to play with these since they were published, I would say that looking at them on paper, contrary to your earlier comment, I very much enjoyed seeing like the whole thing on one big piece of paper as opposed to my little computer screen. And so seeing it, you know, seeing the bigger picture was helpful to me, and not having to scroll around or jump around, I found it very helpful. I also noticed that a lot of the comments are about collaboration. So it seems like the, and it's kind of what Mike was saying, you know, the tone seems to be like, hey, you know, let's all work together, let's all get something done, you know, which I was very impressed with.
Yeah, well, I was saying, we're encouraged after interviewing you and the others. It is encouraging. So thank you for saying sure. that. And that reminds me, although everybody on the committee has been given a link to these materials online, nobody else has been given the link, but I wrote it up there, ppcollab.com/dialogue. And, you know, I'm not sure if dialogue is spelled that way or spelled with
it. It's spelled it like us over here. Oh,
really? Okay, because it was a Frenchman who did it. So I just wanted to make sure.
I have one question, too. Are these dialogue maps interactive online? Can we add comments online?
It's possible in if you wanted to spend a gazillion bucks to do it that way, but no, they're not. What we'll do is we'll make these changes that you've done in
Okay, so are these going to reappear at every meeting, or what's...
If it turns out to be useful.
Yeah.
And you would certainly see the result of this exercise in another version as part of our meeting notes.
Okay.
And one of the things about this is several people have talked to me about this, not necessarily in this meeting. The one icon that we didn't use was the agreement icon. There is one in the software because, you know, you haven't gotten there. It may just be simmering immediately below the surface, or it may be a lot of mining. If you choose to continue to work with these, you would end up transforming these quite a bit. And in fact, they would more likely than not get simpler rather than more complicated.
Maybe for a moment, focus on the things that you saw were added, or that you and you yourself added. Did you see anything that really caught your eye that was written up there this evening? There are some that have got a lot of attention. The one in the back actually is getting a lot of attention. Let's do this one first. So this is the one about... this is about communication, ground rules for communication. So there's a lot of interest in exactly how the committee is going to communicate. A lot of agreement about what's written up here already. This one is a continuation of this, as you probably realize. This is a but. So, talking, this was about desal alternatives, so there's sort of response to that. And then for, this is about the charge, what is the charge of the committee? There's a little constellation of things around here about conservation and sort of a science-based comment there. This is a plus, an agreement, good idea, and there's a lot of pluses here. So here's a little negative, only really good reasons. So, I mean, there's a little bit of pushing in both directions.
We don't
we don't need to go through it all, but I do want to encourage you to see how it's developing, because it does sort of show the feelings that are running around.
So before our next meeting, well, maybe not before next meeting, that's tomorrow, but soon, you would take these comments and add them to the map.
That's the idea. And but really, it depends on how useful the maps become. You know, if they're evidently, you find them useful, then we'll stay with them. If you really, you know, just find them entertaining this evening, but after that you're not so interested, then we might not do it. But certainly we find them very helpful. So I think we're ready to move on from the dialogue map discussion. Is that right?
Nicholas, I just want to add that as an aging member of the community, I really appreciate having everything out there, being able to see it and know that it doesn't get lost and that it's going to be addressed and that it's going to be resolved. That's really hurting. That's a very positive thing. And I'm trying to think of where else can I use this system. So thank you.
It's vaguely addictive. So thank you, Steve. Then let's move on. The next item is the charter. So this is a really big topic. We're going to be talking about this day and tomorrow and the next day. And there are, as I said, we're going to be lucky to complete everything in the charter in this session. We're going to have to sort of figure out some way of handling that. There are some that I would really recommend, and obviously you're going to decide what you want to do, but I really recommend that there are some that in particular that you pay attention to. The first one is the decision-making process. I think you kind of got to do that first. And then the other ones are your communication questions, how to handle subcommittees. There's one that I really want to get to in these first sessions of your meeting. And that's the question of elevation, which is really how are we going to handle it when it gets really tough and difficult? And because we want to be able to go there, you know, so we've got to have the right sort of tool to help us through that. So those are the ones that I would really like to do. But unless you disagree, let's put it that way, I would like to start with the decision-making process. Does anybody disagree with that? Can we start there?
Great.
That is page 6A. Eight or nine. It's 9. There we go. Decision-making process. So this has been written by Carrie and me as a what Carrie calls Mad Libs. The game you've all played. I never played Mad Libs. I couldn't. I thought it was a misprint. I said Mad Libs. So it's really not complete by any means, but we think we've included everything you could possibly want to include.
Everything you told us to is assessment, so we didn't just write a off-the-shelf thing. It was informed by the maps, which were informed by you.
And so this is we think of as a good informed starting point. But as you can see, it's got a lot of sort of square brackets where we strike out something and add something. And you may say, well, we don't need this. I mean, we're just going to be really nice to each other all the way through. I wouldn't recommend that. But let's start at the top. Article 6. So, Carrie, are we going to plug you in?
Let's wait till the last minute. It's going to be a while before we have something to write.
Okay. Because we can put it up on the wall eventually, and Carrie will be able to sort of write as we go. So the general decision-making process, then there's the special decision-making processes. You'll see that the general decision-making process that we hope you're going to adopt is a collaborative, essentially consensus-building process. There are a lot of reasons why this is a valuable thing for you. The main one, I think, is because, as the mayor said at the beginning, you're going to have the most impact if you can come up with something that you all agree on. So sort of plan A, actually I shouldn't use that term, So the that will confuse us a big time later on. So the preferred path is a path that takes you to consensus. So I would suggest, and that's why I put it in here, that that's going to be your sort of principal way of operating. There are some places where that maybe isn't such a good idea, and that's what the special decision-making processes are about. But let's start with the general decision-making process. Perhaps I should read it. It's not very long. The committee's decision-making process will differ from the council or city commissions in that it is intended to reach consensus through a collaborative process. Therefore, the committee will use this hierarchy of decision tools. There are four in this hierarchy. The first is the preferred decision tool is for the committee to arrive at a sense of the meeting. And there's a glossary in this which explains that the sense of the meeting is just everybody recognizes that there's this agreement just sort of floating to the top. It's unmistakable. Everybody's ready for it. And that would just be wonderful if we can make that. That's the preferred one. The second one would be a regular consensus. So it says here, consensus is highly desirable. Consensus or sense of the meeting are the only decision processes to be used for making recommendations about water supply to the council. And then consensus is defined in the glossary. But so you can see that there are two ways that you could go here. You could say, well, it's a great idea for us to have consensus. Or you could say, consensus or sense of the meeting are the only decision-making processes that we're going to use for the recommendation that we make about water supply to the council. Or maybe there's some other decision-making process that you'd like to have as that step in the hierarchy. I'll keep going to the four steps of the hierarchy. Then the third one is that formal voting may be used as a fallback when consensus fails. And then lastly, informal voting may be used only to explore the decision space. And that was just defined in the glossary as well, I think. So here what we're talking about is, for example, somebody has a really good novel idea that nobody's thought of before. And because we haven't had a chance to consider it, and maybe we're running a bit short of time, and we want to sort of see if this is something we want to consider, we'd say, so how does everyone feel? Let's get a sort of sense of how everybody feels about this. Just raise your hand if this is something that you would really like to explore further. And so we take a vote. And we discover that, you know, that most of us are really interested in this. Three or four of us are not so interested, but they'll be prepared to put up with it if most of us want to talk about it. So that's what we would do. So that's just an informal vote, just to explore whether that's something that we want to pursue.
That's what's sometimes referred to as a straw vote.
You could call it a straw vote if you like. I mean, it's just to give you an idea of whether it's worthwhile going with. Or perhaps there's another sort of meta question that you want to deal with and make sure that you're doing something that everybody or most people want to work on. So in any case, those are the four that we listed here, that we heard about. And let's have a discussion about this. I guess we should go first of all with questions for clarifying this. And then, yes.
Well, to me, sense of the meeting and consensus, according to the glossary, is pretty much the same. Because there's no reservations in sense of the meeting, so anybody would vote for would be in agreement.
That's right. Well, consensus is not necessarily that everybody loves it. It could be that the three of you really love it. Two of you kind of will. It's okay, except for something, but that doesn't matter. Let's not worry about that. And then another three of you think, well, gosh, this is agonizing for me because I can see that everybody likes it and it doesn't really agree with most of what I want. But if we take this, at least I'll get most of what I need. And so, consensus has a huge range of sentiment about it. You can have a lot of people who really don't like it, but know that it's the best bet for them in the situation. There's the sense of the meeting. You know, I don't know because I'm. That is like it's a superb consensus. It's like everybody loves it. It's a no-brainer. It may have been a really heavy lift to get that, but when you get that, it's just, oh boy, you know. There's a song you sing, I think. So that's the difference between consensus and the sense of the meeting. And so they are a little bit different. So, other questions about this?
No, I have a comment on the question.
Well, go ahead.
I like the order of the hierarchy. I think that we should really work hard on consensus before deciding to move to the next step, and that we can't reach a consensus. It's sometimes tempting to sort of get it done and sort of have a quick vote, and if the vote's, you know, 8-6 or whatever, we haven't done very much here. So that you really want to try and see if you can't come to consensus on things. But there are points where, for example, I'll just make one up, but, you know, where 13 people in the group think, no, that alternative does not work. It's not feasible for whatever reason. But there's still one person that is not going to join that consensus. I still think this is the best idea yet, and we're going to go there. And at some point you realize you've got to be able to move on, and 13-1 is enough. And you work hard to persuade the other person, they try and change your mind. At some point, you're forced to go to a vote because otherwise you're just stuck and you can't move on. But that should be reserved, as I think it's suggested here, for those things where you really tried to get a consensus, worked hard at it, you're no longer split down the middle, but now it's time to move on and recognize that the vast majority of the committee has accepted some idea about mm-hmm. something. So I like this way of doing it. My only idea would be we really should work hard at the consensus before moving on. You give up on consensus at some cost, because then the final conclusions may not be consensus over the final recommendation. So you want to avoid doing that if you can. But sometimes you have to go to a vote because there's no way to move forward.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you raised the point about the awareness of the ramifications of moving forward without consensus, because it can come back and it can bite you pretty bad, actually. But thank you for raising that. Yes, Doug.
Yeah, I've been trying to imagine, and I'm still trying to imagine, despite Bob's comments, a structure that eliminates formal voting and that really encourages us to achieve consensus. So I think, as Lynn pointed out and you reinforced, if we exit the process without consensus, we probably haven't done our job. And now I recognize there may be some small points along the way, but I guess I'd like to think we can play well enough with others that we don't need to vote somebody down in order to be able to move along. I'm at the same time, if formal vote's going to be in the hierarchy, I would swap it with the informal vote. I would think the informal vote would be a tool we use more often, and then the formal vote would be the thing, kind of the refuge of last resort.
Well, that's interesting. It's a sort of interesting nicety there, but it's perfectly workable, so we could switch them around. I think it's perhaps a good idea to just visit the special decision processes. This whole section is in square brackets, but the idea is that there may be some particular kinds of issue that lend themselves to voting, and it's not going to mess up what happens at the end. You know, what Mike was saying, and I was agreeing with, the idea of a failure to reach consensus coming and kind of biting you at the end of the whole thing. There are some kinds of, some issues up for decision that actually are not going to come up and bite you at the end, or probably are not. And that's what these are about. Changes to the charter, appointments of a subcommittee, appointment of a new committee member, and you know, you can fill in the blank after that. And those perhaps you want to assign a particular kind of decision-making process to, which may be less challenging to reach. But I just want you to know that whereas what Mike was describing was a situation where
every issue that you take on, you work and work and work and work and work for consensus, and then maybe you decide that you're not going to make it, so you go some other, you vote on it. What this is saying is, well, there are some kinds of decision which maybe don't require that much work before you switch to consensus, or maybe you should go to voting straight away. So if you want to, we can put, you know, you can put some of those in. How are we doing here? Does this, how much, you know, it's like nobody's jumping up to talk.
I do have one concern. There's this thing in decision psychology called anchoring. It's very powerful, and it's subconscious, so you can't do anything about it. So there is a danger with the charter, the way we wrote it, that we're going to anchor you. So, for instance, talking about, you know, the entire list, we're hoping that you're going to pick and choose from them, not think of this as the default, okay? Just remember that.
Yeah. Thank you, Carrie. So, is there any, are there any questions or concerns, doubts, need for discussion about the preferred decision tool? Although, like the top two, the sense of the meeting and the consensus. Mike?
I would offer a resolution between these two views, which is that, and we'll see if it's, you know, acceptable, but that we only go to a vote by a consensus in effect. In other words, when the group together realizes we're stuck, it's 13-1, we've been talking about it for 4 days, and it's not moving, and the person's not changing their mind, and the rest of us aren't changing our mind, and there's no other way to, like, move forward over this point. Again, hopefully it's not the biggest point about the whole issue or something, that at that point we would have to decide at that point by consensus. I would hope if people are playing by the right kind of agreements here, even the person who disagrees would say, yeah, you're not going to change my mind, and I don't want to make this come to a grinding halt, so even I agree, let's just move on, and I'll be happy to record my vote, you know, rather, because I want to make sure that people know I don't like this decision. I'm not part of it. I'm not consensing with it. So that's a way to sort of really make it consensus-based, but at least have the option, at least, of not being just stalled if you can't come to some agreement.
So if we were to do what Mike is proposing, we might, small Roman numeral 3, it would be a formal vote would be used as a fallback. If there's consensus to switch to a vote... Kind of interesting, isn't it?
If there's consensus that there's no consensus.
Yeah, consensus that there's no consensus and that we need to do something else.
The alternative to that's a crisis. I mean, you know, we could have that too, but well, this is a way to try and avoid an absolute.
There's going to be some way of moving forward.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds like it's, you know, just a last resort sort of thing to vote that things move.
Yeah. But you know, what would come out of that is that, I mean, I'm just tossing this out because there's always the concern that people may try to game this. I mean, you never know how things are going to turn out. But if you aren't able to reach consensus, so say there's one holdout, then you say, well, let's vote. The holdout could hold out on that as well. I mean, so you just sort of stop. You kind of would paint yourselves into a corner. Is there any way around that with this kind of thing? I mean, can we figure that out?
Yeah. Whereas you don't want to put social pressure on the person that disagrees with you about their view, the idea of bringing the whole thing to a grinding halt, I think social pressure forces that person to accept the reality that we got to do something here. That's my, you know, that nobody wants to be that much of a obstructionist that it just grinds to a halt and we don't go anywhere. That's a different issue than holding on to their view strongly about some issue that does matter to them, and I want to respect that.
Do we want to rely on social pressure?
I don't know what else you got. You know,
yeah.
Physical pressure, though.
If we find we're running into this.
You could come back and change the charter. And in fact, one of the things that you may want to decide is, well, if we want to change the charter, how are we going to handle that? So it sounds like this sounds like a good idea to you, as long as you can come back and change it later. Yes, Mark.
I want to make sure I understand this, because the way it's written and the way I'm understanding it is different. So the super consensus is sort of preferred, and then the next one says super consensus or consensus will be the only ways. But now we still have these other provisions. Well, we can vote, or we can sort of do these straw votes. We can generally can, you know, we can come to a consensus that a vote's a good idea. But if we put the words only in there, then only kind of eliminates options, right? If we say we're only going to make recommendations with consensus, so should we strike the onlys?
That would be the impact of what I'm recommending.
One of the bit that Mark is pointing to is the bit that says, you know, either it's like an either or thing here in
the second bracket
in the second and in A2. Consensus is highly desirable is one alternative that we put in. And then consensus or sense of meeting is the only way you can do it if you're making a decision on the recommendations about water supply to the council. So like when you're really dealing, you're at the pointed end of the process, you're dealing with your recommendation to the council, then what this would say is then you can only use consensus. What Mark and I think Mike were saying was, well, let's scratch that.
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
It's inconsistent with the other two items
to report. Generally, when there's more than one bracket, it's because you're supposed to pick one or the other.
Yeah,
so the inconsistency is on purpose.
Yeah.
Right, okay, fine.
Yeah, so they're mutually exclusive.
Yeah.
I think we have consensus.
You think we have consensus on striking the... So what we're doing is we're saying consensus is highly desirable.
Yes.
And strike the elements. And then we're saying formal voting may be used as a fallback when consensus fails if we get consensus that we should vote formally.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, and I thought I heard an idea to put item 4 is item 3.
That's right. Yeah. Right. And then
I'm supportive of that. So
yeah, that's good too.
I think
yeah.
that's an idea to these exploring votes. I think is kind of a fun. Or, you know, there's not a lot at stake. You can kind of vote and vote again, vote 4 or 5 times. You know.
Exactly. You can even change your mind in between.
You can change your mind. Yeah.
Okay. Does anybody object to changing the order 3 and 4? Then there's a consensus on that for sure.
Yeah. Great.
So I am going to turn the computer on.
I know this thing.
Yeah. I'm not actually sure how we make the projector start.
Well, we have to get...
Here goes our view.
The projector comes from back there. I know
yeah,
that.
So we need Ray. Heidi, can you track Ray down?
Do you know where he's... Yeah. He's not at the desk. There's a phone number in the kitchen.
Do you know how the power... Is this it?
That's it right here.
Is that it?
Is that a voice recorder?
That's a recording.
Oh,
recorder.
Is it?
It's a projector.
This is it.
We're good. So basically, I just made the changes, which you'll see in track changes in a second, that you're now having consensus be highly desirable. You changed the order so that informal voting is... higher, although there's nothing that says that the order changes the preference yet. But I assume it would be like that. And still on the table is the discussion about the consensus to have a vote, which I understand will basically allow that person, the outlier, a chance to get on the record that he didn't like the part, or she didn't. I mean, that's
the intent.
Okay. So that hasn't been decided yet, but do I have your permission to add some language to make the now flipped order clear that it's in order of preference? Oh, it does
this
say
is the
hierarchy of decision tools. Okay. All right. Thanks.
Great. Yes, right.
Just, you know, if the intent is for someone to be able to register that they're not in agreement, and we can do that. You know, the Quakers call that standing aside. We don't have to have a vote to abandon consensus. I think we would just do that.
So
that would be my suggestion. Rather than we realize when it was only one person, and then now we have to have a vote to abandon consensus. That could be comfortable. So that would be my suggestion, just to ask that person to stand aside and to move forward.
Okay. Oh, I see.
Never vote.
Well, okay, now I realize there needs to be another part to that, which is if they say, no, I'm not going to stand aside because I'm going to block this decision, no, that's then we go to vote.
That was, yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
So we should maybe add another thing instead. Are people clear what we're talking about? Because first you try and reach a consensus, you work really hard at it. We have this example, which, you know, obviously this pure, but one person standing out here, they say, look, I really disagree with this, but I'm going to stand aside. Go ahead and do it, but I just want to agree with you, though I don't agree with you, you're wrong. That's fine. But sometimes the person will say, no, I'm not going to stand aside. I don't think your guys are crazy, and you're making a big mistake here, and this is really, really wrong. At which point, again, your choice is revote the whole process, do something weird, or at that point, give them their chance to vote their no and move on. But that would happen after turn, and give them the option to stand aside.
And we're drawing a distinction between consenting to consensus and standing aside.
Yeah.
Is that meaningful for everybody?
Well, if we're looking for consent to go to a vote, and someone is intent upon being an obstructionist, we're not going to get that consent to vote.
Right.
So it seems contradictory.
I'm going to make the assumption that nobody in this group is that destructive, that they're going to, like, literally, just try to make this thing stop, you know. We disagree about stuff, but
this was the thing that you were raising about relying on some sort of social pressure,
yeah.
And then there were concerns that that might not be adequate. But then I forget who it was said, "Well, then we can change the rule." I think it sounds like we got the first part of the. We got A organized, right?
Well. You lost me then. Did we drop the idea of how to deal with the stand aside person? Would that be B?
So the stand aside was consensus is highly desirable. Did you write? You didn't actually write anything about the stand. But if somebody cannot join the consensus, then they can stand aside.
And I think that's, Rick was saying that's part of consensus process.
That's part of the Quaker, apparently.
Well, we can put that in the definition of the glossary, then. That would be the way to handle that.
And
so, consensus, and that the glossary would say something like consensus can include a situation where some committee members stand aside and allow the consensus to go forward.
The thing is. Part of where I'm lost now then is if you have the stand aside provision, do you still also want voting? Or are you going to strike the voting now that you have the stand aside provision?
I feel like I'm speaking too much, but I thought what we were suggesting was first, consensus itself includes the stand aside possibility.
Yes.
Should even that fail, then you go to a next level, which is. This person, I've seen this happen in the real world. This is not an abstraction.
Oh, yeah.
That somebody really wants their no vote recorded. I am no on this issue, and I'm not, I'm not standing aside.
Yeah.
I want it on the record that this is wrong and you shouldn't be doing it. That's still short of, blowing the place up, but it's a stronger way of really objecting to where things are going. And I think people should have that right. I mean, ultimately, you shouldn't force people to. Kind of like they agreed when they really didn't.
Mm-hmm. So in that case, you'd have a vote. The person who would otherwise have stood aside is standing up and saying no.
Ask all the rule. I want my no recorded.
Exactly.
I'm not in favor of this.
Yeah. So we go to a vote in that case. Charlie.
Well, there was a question line about the stand aside position. Is there a recording in some way of the position of the person who's going to stand aside? They firmly object. Don't want to proceed, or is it just amongst friends? No.
Well, that's it's what you want, first of all. if you want a stand aside to be explicit, then we can say that it'll be explicit, and the person who stands aside will be recorded if they wish to be recorded as standing aside. I mean, I don't think there's any problem with that.
Well, I think it's important that people are able to express their position and their reasoning behind whatever position they're taking.
Yeah. Yes, and one of the things, I don't know if we need to write it into this, but it will be, if, for example, you get down to the last decision, and
you can't reach consensus. It will be the next most valuable thing that you could do would be to say, you know, most of us agreed on this, and here's why. Some of us agreed on this, and here's why. The explanation of why you couldn't reach agreement is probably, you know, in the absence of complete agreement, that's your next best thing, and you want to make sure that it's in that. It'll make what you present to the council much, much more useful. So I think you're going to want to make sure that happens. I don't know if we need to write it in. I mean, it's...
Well, there's a section that describes what you want your notes to look like, and I would recommend that you actually specify that these stand designs are an important thing to include in the notes. So I will flag that.
Great.
But
thank you.
Do we have... This is the problem with damn consensus. It's so time-consuming.
Do we have consensus? I mean, well, let's hear from Mark first of all, and then we'll go.
I just have a question. I'll frame it as a comment. I understand a legislative body, which I guess we are. Everyone's required to vote, and their vote must be recorded. Do I understand that correctly? So standing aside, is that an option?
Is it abstaining?
That would be a...
You cannot abstain. You can disqualify yourself from a vote, but you cannot. You must vote. And cannot. But that's what I've heard. I don't know the truth about that. And I'm wondering about that right now. So
I think the standing aside is specific to the consensus process. And what the person is saying, I disagree with you guys, but I'm not going to stop this. And I can see that everybody else in the room or most of the other people in the room think this is a good idea. And so I'm going to stand aside and let you make this decision. So it's not the same exactly as abstaining or not taking a position. They've stated their position. They're against the consensus decision that's being made.
Okay.
But they're not going to block it. They're not going to stop it from, you know, so they'll say, there was a consensus. Three members stood aside. Maybe that would be what you report in the minutes. It's not like not voting or saying, I'm going to be silent on my views, which is a different matter.
I think that it's worthwhile just visiting the Robert's Rules of Order thing. We're attempting to not use Robert's Rules of Order because Robert's Rules of Order tends to work against what we're trying to do in terms of developing a collaborative environment. It actually kind of sets you at odds right away, and it can be quite destructive to a collaborative process. So you won't find an equivalent in the collaborative process to everything in Robert's Rules of Order, but you can find some things that will kind of match up, like what we've just described about standing aside and speaking.
Can I
make a
comment? Hi, everyone. I'm Tina with the City of Santa Cruz. And Mark's right. For advisory bodies, you're not allowed to abstain. But there are more formal bodies that vote on everything. And this is a hybrid, as Nicholas is explaining. Do some things advisory body, but this is different, a different animal. So we'll have to figure out, you'll have to figure out how to work within that decision space. So what I'm hearing is not causing me alarm. So far.
Thank you.
Council can abstain, and advisory bodies can't.
Sorry, Senator.
Council members can abstain.
Oh, I see.
But advisory bodies cannot.
Thank you. So, Dave.
So can we have multiple people standing aside, and that will still be recorded as a consensus? Because it seems like if there are multiple people, I mean,
it wouldn't be so useful, would it?
No.
I mean, but you can do it if you want to. But it would not be as useful as if you can either develop a consensus or develop a majority opinion and a minority opinion. I mean, definitely, just having a lot of people kind of standing back, if it's a lot of people, but. Generally, this kind of thing happens when there's like one holdout who recognizes that for the benefit of the group as a whole, the best thing that they can do is stand aside.
So,
you know,
Yes.
It also happens that you've got five people that don't that are going to stand aside, and the reason they're standing aside, they disagree with the decision, but it's just not that important to them. So I'm going to stand aside. I don't want to be recorded in history as having thought this was a good idea. I don't, but I don't feel that strongly about it that I'm going to block it from moving forward. Go ahead. I don't care. It's not that you wouldn't do this on your final vote about your recommendation to the council, but earlier on, that often happens. You go like, no, I don't. That's not right, but. Everybody else seems to think it's great, but I don't want to say that I think it's great. I've thought it through, and I think it's a mistake, but it's just not that important to me. I'm going to stand aside. Go ahead.
I guess I'm wondering if it's 13-1, there can be a stand aside, but if it gets to a point where it's 10-4 or something like that, I mean, is there a condition where it's one person that can stand aside, and then beyond that, then you go to the vote or something like that?
But I think it depends on the circumstances. I mean, as Mike is saying, that if you've got something that's really important, you probably don't even want to have one person standing aside. You want to have, you'll go to, whatever the third one was, or the fourth one. It'll be, vote, we'll fall back on voting, probably. But if it's, if it's something that's relatively insignificant, like there may be some issues in the charter that are just kind of, and four or five people may say, I don't agree with this, but I don't want to spend any more time on it because it doesn't make any difference to me. So just don't, I want you to know that I don't agree, but get on with it. Then it's a relatively insignificant issue in those circumstances. It probably doesn't matter if four people or five people are standing aside.
So it's not strong enough to cast a no vote, but disagree enough to not vote.
There's a whole range of ways that you can approach each decision. I mean, this is a much more sort of rich process than just up or down.
It's about humility. It's like recognize, I think they're making a bad mistake here. I don't want to be recorded as thinking this was a good idea. I think they're going to fall on their face. But I might be wrong. Everybody, the majority seems to think it's a good idea, and I don't care that much about it, so go for it. I'm not going to make a big speech, and I'm not going to waste any more time. I stand aside and go for it.
You just want to be able to say, I told you so.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, on some level.
But that's not humble enough. So how are we doing here? It looks like we've got at the top of the list the sense of the meeting. We agreed that we don't want to have the. We just want to say consensus is highly desirable. We're not saying consensus is the only process. We've said that it's okay to stand aside. We've said that. The informal voting, so we switched the last two around. Informal voting may only be used to explore the decision space, and that's one that's okay. And then at the end here, we're saying formal voting may be used as a fallback when consensus fails, and we're still saying, right, as long as we reach consensus, everybody agrees that we should vote. Have I got that right? Okay. Then the special decision processes. So this is where, just by the very nature of the issue at hand, we know we're going to have to do something special. I guess the first thing is, do we need to discuss this? I mean, are there going to be situations where there's something so special that we need to have a special way of approaching it?
I don't see one here yet that I found compelling.
We listed a few.
Right. So,
and you're saying that there's nothing now that you would.
I've not seen anything here. We could have done with the process was already laid out.
How about
otherwise?
Well, typically, when you do constitutions or rules, the basic rules of an organization, require a supermajority to change those 2/3 or 3/4 or something, because it shouldn't be done lightly by a meeting that happens to have people that like this change in the way you're doing stuff, but. Sometimes you just need to change it. You realize, and there's no way to know ahead of time that something, the way we set these rules out about how we operate, we're just going to realize it's not working and it needs to be changed. And typically when that happens, a supermajority would agree. Not necessarily people that disagree about the outcome, but the process itself is, again, ground to a halt. We need to somehow have to get out of the mess you're in.
Go ahead.
Sorry. Isn't that kind of what we've addressed in the decision-making process?
You could use that process for that as well.
What we're saying here is that if there's a particular kind of issue, we won't even go to method A, 1, 2, or 3, or 1, 2, 3. We'll go straight to method 4, for example, or we'll go straight to a particular method. It's just that it could save you a bit of time. That's really all it is.
I would propose, just for the sake of efficiency, because they're not really part of our core issues, if you want to appoint new members or change the charter, we just go to vote and yes or no and done. Subcommittees is never a problem, I think. It's rather a question of finding enough people to volunteer for it, and so I would put that in.
Well, no, this one would be like deciding that a subcommittee needed to exist, for example. Okay. Right? And then you can hope that people will join. So what I'm hearing from Peter is that that there are some things that are not the mainstream of your work. They don't need the same sort of significant kind of commitment from everybody. They don't need the same sort of deliberation. Charlie?
Just wanted to offer Dave Baskin, one of our committee members who couldn't attend tonight, asked me to offer his views on a few things on Article 6. His comment was, I think changes to the charter and appointment of new committee members should require a supermajority, for instance, 60%. Everything else can be done by majority rule. We cannot achieve consensus or sense of the meeting. That was his perspective on it.
Mm-hmm. So he's also picked out at least one issue that needs to be...
Change of charter, appointment of new committee members.
Yes, so he picked out two that needed special attention, and he thought the supermajority would do that.
Yes.
So I have a question. We haven't even defined in our formal voting if we're going to do a majority or supermajority. So do we need to address that question in our normal decision-making process? If we get to item 4, we haven't defined... We mean we take a vote, but we haven't defined how we move forward. Yeah. So don't we kind of need to define that in the first section? And wouldn't that kind of feed into this second section? If we define in A4 that we want a supermajority, then that would apply to B as well, and we wouldn't necessarily need a separate process for it, correct?
It's true that we... Go ahead.
Well, I think that's a really good point. And since the main purpose of this group is coming to consensus rather than having a split vote of, again, 8-6 or something, I'd say let's go for a supermajority. If we're first in that position, we can't get consensus. We really shouldn't be making a decision that's split down the middle. It's not helpful to the city council to have two opposing views split down the middle. So I'd say suggest a 2/3 majority of whatever the quorum is established. If you come to a vote, 2/3 of the people should agree with it. Otherwise, you should go back and discuss some more until you get a better, make another shot at consensus. If you can't get 2/3 majority, you've got a problem on your hands. Again, I wouldn't think about in many groups, but this one, if we can't, our whole job is consensus here, really.
Then we would have to differentiate between the 6A and 6B. The voting could be the same.
Okay, no, right.
Maybe we wouldn't have to differentiate between different votes.
That was your suggestion.
Right,
that
was
Because if we have consensus that we're like, oh, let's just vote on this, then we've kind of done what we're trying to outline in B, I guess. It just seems a little repetitive. And changes to the charter, I would feel we should follow the IS, 6A, the same process.
Okay, so but that process is a supermajority now vote. And then that makes the second half, as Peter and you both pointed out, redundant. Define supermajority?
Exactly, we need to do that. You said 2/3, but it could be any amount. It could be based on all the number of people in the committee, or it could be based on the quorum. Have to decide that. So, any ideas about the super size?
I'm not sure you can decide those two things independently. Suppose we say a quorum is 12, and a supermajority is 2/3, and that's 8. But that's 8 out of 14, which is only one person away from 7-4 and 7 against.
Yeah. And by the way, tonight you have 12. you know, the first time you all sit down, you only manage to kind of couple together 12, because life is like that. So, be careful about how much.
Well, just to respond to that, I mean, it could be 2/3 of the people present.
That's your point.
Yeah, that's my point.
2/3 of people present may represent almost a split of the entire committee.
Yeah.
Depending on what we said.
That would be an incentive to show up at the meeting.
So, you would think maybe a higher, 80%?
2/3
of the board. A higher threshold.
Yeah, okay. 2/3 is 9 and 4/4.
What's 3/4?
2/3
of 14, yeah. But if you only have 12,
if it's 2/3 of a quorum, then it's a different number.
Yeah. That's correct. Is it simpler to simply make it an absolute number?
10.
So you...
<It's>
digital. right now we're talking about the supermajority being a specific number of votes. 10. Mike?
For practical years of experience, you don't want to have a full meeting, spend 3 hours talking about something, have everybody in the room finally come together and understand it, and not have enough votes for the next meeting. You have to do the whole thing all over again. I've been through that. So I don't think having an absence, I think you want to have a clear idea of what the quorum is to be able to do business, mm-hmm. and then the people, it should be some number of that, not an absolute number, but some percentage of that quorum that has to support something. Otherwise, you have that problem. And it should be an incentive to show up at meetings. You're not there. Something could happen that's important to you and you missed it. So at least send a message to somebody. It won't violate the ground. I have to send him a message telling him, here's my view on this matter, so at least you know what I think, because I couldn't make the meeting for some unavoidable reason. But otherwise, be here or miss your chance to shape where it goes. That's the reality.
Another important thing to recognize is that as we get closer to the pointed end of this process, I think attendance is going to be pretty good. I would be amazed if we have. I would be very disappointed actually if we didn't have really good attendance at that point. So, go ahead.
My reasoning for 10 is partly that expecting people will show up.
Yeah.
But also that what would be persuasive to the public, to the city.
Yeah.
Would 8 certainly wouldn't be persuasive. 9's not far from 8. 10's pretty clear, it seems to me.
So you've got, on the one hand, you're saying, let's shoot for the big number because we want to have an impact.
Yeah.
And on the other hand, it's like, be careful because you may find that you just don't have enough people in the room and you end up having to go around the process again.
We already get, consensus was the first place. Yeah. So. But I'm thinking with 10, so we have to meet one more time. Is what your argument is, right?
I'm backing off from my position. I'm finding your argument persuasive.
Consensus at work.
Right.
But wouldn't
10. I like the number 10.
Hang on a second. Mark wants to
speak. Couldn't we also, I like what you're saying, and couldn't we say something like a quorum is 10 and 75% of the people of the quorum, 75% of the people present constitutes a majority or something like that, which means 8 people of the 10 present would have to agree in order to have a passing vote.
But then
how would that sit with you?
That's much like what I was thinking about before with a quorum of 12, because 8 out of 10 is 8 out of 14, which is just 1/50%.
But at 3/4, you'd have 9 out of 12. If you had a 75%... vote of whoever's present, would carry a voting matter. Then the minimum, if you had a quorum, if 10 were there, then you'd have 8 could vote to pass something. If 12 were there, 9 would have to vote to pass something. I'm just exploring this idea.
If this is going to be our final recommendation, this is the vote we're talking about, the number for that vote. Is that correct?
It could be anything.
But I understand where you're if these are the big, big decisions, then we need to have... Then we haven't done our work if we're not at 10, is the way I see it.
Well, remember that earlier on he was saying we haven't really done our work if we don't get consensus.
Yeah.
So we're falling back from consensus into some number that feels significant. And you will probably have, in that, those circumstances, you would have a majority opinion and maybe one or two minority groups. So what we have in front of us are a pretty good range of alternatives. But I think one is, are we counting from who's in the room, or are we counting from the group as a whole? And I think we've come down to counting from who's in the room. Is that right?
We're doing both, I think.
Yeah, I think we're still exploring both.
We're still exploring both. Okay, well, let's keep going. Yeah. Let's keep going. Go ahead, Charlie.
Should we digress to Article 3 and address what the quorum is going to be and then proceed with how we dissect that quorum for
sure.
Voting privileges?
Yeah. That's a pretty straightforward one. Do you have a page number, Charlie?
Page 2.
Starts on page 1.
Okay.
Item F, quorum.
Well, that's right. So we got the first thing is the 14 members. We know about that. It's an F. So it's at the last one on page 2. And we're not doing the others. So a meeting of the committee will be considered to have sufficient members present for it to function if there are at least... fill in the blank. It needs to be more than 7. So what do you think?
I think on any given night we're going to see what we have tonight, where people are going to have conflicts.
Oh, absolutely.
It's going to be one
or
two people missing.
Yeah.
So if you set the threshold so high, everybody shows up and then has to go home because there's not a quorum. That's a waste of time and energy.
Exactly.
So I would throw out a number of 10. Seems to be a popular number tonight.
10.
I'd recommend that too. One of the jobs of the mayor is to deal with the quorum problems of the commissions of the city if there are many. And if you may set it about 10 out of 14, you're likely to get quorums at most meetings. If you make it any higher than that, you're going to have problems.
Yeah.
It's just my experience of committees of committed people in the city on serving on bodies like this. So I'd say make the quorum 10, and maybe you want to make the argument would be, we'll come back to it, that you're going to have require all 10 people if only 10 show up to decide it. But I think a quorum of 10, you won't cancel a lot of meetings. If you make it any higher than that, you're going to start to cancel meetings, and that really is a bummer.
Yeah, well, you don't want to do that.
Yeah.
So we've got 10. Any comments about 10? Anybody want to complain about 10 or Doug? Doug, sorry, it's a bummer. Does everybody have their thumb up?
This is your fourth section of voting. This is the.
Can we participate from outside the area? Can we call in?
Oh, there were both of the people who weren't able to come today asked about. Oh no, two of the people who are going to miss a moment during this three session meeting asked about this, and it's extremely complicated. But I think it's complicated. We could put a phone in the middle of the table here. And wherever you are, if you want to join by phone, in order to comply with Robert's rules, you have to have a phone that is be in a place that's accessible to the public. So you can't be in your car going down the freeway.
It's not Robert's rules.
You have to post. You've got to have the agenda posted on the wall where you're sitting, and the place where you're going to be has to be listed in the agenda when it goes out 72 hours ahead of time. So unless you really are sure about where you're going to be and people can join you, and it's difficult.
This just happened at Bruce Jaffe at the so-called Food Water District. He had exactly this problem. He was on the phone. He did not post the agenda next to where he was, and so he could not vote on the
It's dreadful, yeah.
Meeting.
I mean, I've seen meetings where, I've been in meetings where there's somebody on the phone, but, there's a little checklist that they ran down to make sure that he was in compliance, and, So that's the answer to that one. So I think you shouldn't count on it. So, 10. Any objections to 10? We have a consensus. Maybe there's even a kind of a
sense
of the room. The magic number.
So
So now we're going to sit back to
very Napoleonic.
So now we go back to the bit that we were struggling with.
Let me do a little time check. See how we're doing. It's 8:05, so we've got a little bit more than half an hour. We're going to run over about 10 minutes. And we need about 15 minutes at the end to make sure we know where we're going to start tomorrow. So we're back on page 9, right? Now we know that we're going to have at least 10 people in the room. So, what do you think?
I think our vote is 10.
Yeah.
So you would say that a vote is like...
We have to be able to express the sense of the committee. And if it's going to be... If we're going to hold a vote and you've got a partial attendance, then it better be consensus.
So
there's no need to vote.
That's
kind of the point.
Yeah.
So it's like, well, wait a minute. So you've tried consensus. You couldn't get the consensus, so you go to a vote, and if there are only 10 people there, you're essentially stuck.
And that's only in a special case of 10 people present. If you have 11 people,
provision. Okay. Yeah. I wanted to make sure that I'm just kind of running that by. So, other ideas? Doug has got a suggestion.
Well, I second it soon.
That's right. That's right.
And I'll come over to that position.
So, consensus of 10, a quorum of 10. If you only get 10 people there, then everybody's going to agree, because the supermajority is defined as 10.
Right.
Okay.
Any objections? We got it. This is a consensus. Yes. Well done.
It took Vision Center. It was 4 months to come to that conclusion.
Yeah.
No.
Thank you for saying that. Thank you for saying that.
This is not. You're doing. Yeah, we should do this. You're doing really well. You're doing really well. This is your first meeting, and you're kind of clicking in. You're talking about stuff. You're coming up with ideas.
So to vote to change that, we need 10 votes.
That's right. To vote to change that, we need 10 votes. Unless you wanted to do something, special decision processes. If you want, we can say changes to the charter, it's done differently. If you want.
Where we almost were was that you were ready to cut out the entirely.
Yes.
So long as you can solve the supermajority quorum problem.
That was your point.
That was my suggestion.
Yeah. So before we deep 6B, let's just sort of take a breath. And is it something that you actually do want to dispense with? Just. Nobody looks too reluctant to get rid of it. So I guess you just got rid of it. Okay.
You achieved consensus on two things very efficiently. Honestly, Nicholas and I have done some things.
This is great.
But you also made it shorter.
Which is unbelievable. Wait. We have plenty of more to work on.
Yeah, there's plenty more that we can fall over on. But let's... So that's decision-making. We've taken care of decision-making. We now know how you're going to do it. Congratulations. Now we need to decide... this isn't too big a deal, I think. Which of the parts of the charter we want to really focus on next? There are some that I'd like to suggest as being worthy of your attention, your priority attention. The first is 3D, which is to do with adding, let me get that, I think it's on page 2. The director of the water department ex officio members. That's something that I think you need to deal with early on. The next one that I think is on your sort of top of the list is the your roles and communication section. That's section 4 on page 3. Another one, there are two more. And another one is the subcommittees. We are guessing that you're going to need subcommittees, and that you're going to need them to kick in pretty quickly. And I think you'll need, if that's the case, it'll help you to have that figured out. And the last one are the ones that we really think deserve your attention early on. Is the one that's called Elevation, which is on page 15. It's section 12. And that is the part of this charter which is really important and that really gives you the tools to engage in the toughest stuff, the things that are really going to be difficult for you. Yes, John?
Can you define generally elevation?
It's just a sort of a euphemism for dealing with something finding a way to deal with something that we can't deal with at the table. So, for example, I mean, we anticipated that there might be situations where somebody, where there's I'm going to try and find it. I don't want to speak out of turn.
Something that might have been reading through this.
Yeah.
It seemed more personalized, like we're dealing with individuals rather than issues with elevation.
Well, probably it will involve only two or three people. We'll set aside some time and a place where those two or three people can work with me or with Carrie to go through whatever that particular topic is. But we anticipate that kind of thing will come up where somebody just says, this is a load of nonsense, we can't rely on it, set it aside. And somebody else says, well, no, it's not a load of nonsense. And then we get into a situation where really one of the people, or maybe both of the people, feel that the other person is misrepresenting, being disingenuous. You know, I'm trying to find all the nice ways of saying this. And essentially, this is not a conversation that is going to go anywhere at the table with 14 people or even 10 people. It's really something. The point is that we want, if you feel that way about something that comes up, we want you to feel, oh, I can say this. You know, there's not going to be a thunderbolt. There's no punishment. I can say this, and there's a way that we can handle it. So this clause is in there to encourage that kind of interaction. Because you have to be able to say that. I mean, you've got to be able to say that. And you've got to be able to say that and survive. And you've got to be able to say that and survive, and the whole of the committee has to survive. You know, it's like, if we don't build something like this, then you, I mean, I'm pointing at you because you brought it up, could wreck everything. But we're going to build this so you won't wreck it. You can actually speak up, and it'll work. Okay. That's what this is for. I get excited about this because it's actually a really important one. So those are the items that we think are most important for you to get in place first. There's a lot of stuff in here that is important, but not necessary right at the top. And as I said, because we normally would budget between 9 and 12 hours, and we've already kind of cut that back a little bit, we anticipate that we won't get everything done in these 3 days, but we want to make sure we get these ones done. We think these are the important ones. So on that list, what order are you interested in? Is there anyone in particular? I realize I'm standing too close forward. I'm missing out on you guys. Is there anything that you would like to put at the top of the list? Or should we just take it in, you know, we could start with the lowest number. Let's go start at the top and go down. Anybody interested in a particular sequence other than just numerical? Okay, then let me see what the time is. It's 8:15. So,
which of these are the first?
Let's take a run at 3. Is it F?
D.
3D, page 2 or something. Early on, anyway. So this is about adding. We talked about this a lot in the interviews. This is not thin air stuff. I mean, this came up in. Many interviews. And so the idea is that the committee appoints the director of the water department as a non-voting committee member.
as we pointed out here, you know, this is, we put this in, you can strike it out completely if you think this is completely inappropriate. The non-voting committee member, I mean, we said non-voting, you can add to that if you want to in any way that you think is appropriate. If you think it's important to have the director of the water department as an ex officio member. Rick.
Well, I just want to say why I think it's a good idea. Because if Rosemary's here in every meeting and part of the conversation, you know, then there's no communication gaps. And it just feels like it would expedite our work.
Any other comments?
I agree. And the thing is, the officers should not be involved in the consensus process in that sense. In other words, they're answering questions, she would be answering questions, providing information, being sent off to research something, et cetera, by being here, the way Rick's talking about it would be really helpful, but they're not going to be taking a position in which we're arguing about whether we should do it, you know, follow plan A or plan B, because that's how we vote here. So it's not just that they don't vote, they also don't get involved in the consensus discussions about which outcome is the best one. They simply provide information as appropriate.
So essentially, the director would participate essentially by sort of invitation.
By invitation, yeah. Well, or they could ask somewhere, they might say, I've heard you talking about all this, you should know a fact here that's relevant to this conversation that you were not aware of or something. But they wouldn't be a regular member in full discussion with us about every item that we're involved in. Because then, since we're deciding stuff by consensus, they are in effect end up with a vote, the way we mostly decide stuff here.
And since we're a consensus region body, the non-voting here is probably sort of...
I agree with Rick that the water director's presence is really important for us to be able to get stuff done and answer questions we're all going to have.
Can I suggest that I try to write up some language that gets to that and we look at it tomorrow instead of trying to wordsmith that? As long as the idea appeals to everyone.
Yeah.
Does the idea appeal to anyone? Nobody's objecting to that. David, you're looking a little sort of dumb.
I'm looking at the text that's been we're going to talk about
it. It won't look like that when I write it for real.
I certainly agree. I'm just wondering if we need to limit it to the director herself, or if we can expand that to other employees, city employees as needed, if she can draw on them as well.
So it'd be the director or her designee.
If they would provide value.
Like the agenda as relation director, you know, if it's about a certain issue, she can send somebody else that she thought would be.
So her designee in response to a particular need.
Yeah, a good example would be we have a conservation question. Maybe the conservation director is the person we need.
Mm-hmm. Actually, the director raised her hand. Can we invite her?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, I can say that water department staff will be available to the committee to provide any information that you want, answer questions, whatever. So the part about whether we're here and contributing, to the extent that you want us to, the answer is yes, absolutely.
Thank you.
What I'm hearing is we want you at the table.
Yeah.
That's how much involved, if I'm understanding the committee.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you or your designee.
So what I took that to mean is you don't need to worry about the designee part when you need other expertise, because that'll always be available.
Yeah.
I see. Okay. What you're doing. Yeah. Okay.
I'm wondering whether I should stop trying to facilitate when you're...
Go ahead.
Isn't he generous? I really... We'll see when I'm up there, whether I'm as generous to him. Did I mention that it's in my contract that you have to laugh when I'm... I don't know what I was going to say anymore.
Oh, so they laugh. That's all that's important. So, we actually... It sounds like we got agreement on this. You got a consensus?
Yes.
So, yes, the director of the War Department is an ex officio member. We're going to write it up so that it's clear that she's not going to be part of the kind of deliberation that's developing a consensus, but she's going to be at the table with you.
Good.
Okay. So,
I'd like to just add the choice of...
Oh, go ahead. Go ahead, Aaron.
Well, just in case there's a day you can't make it for whatever reason. I'd like to have somebody there anyway, so I just want to make sure that's...
Well, let's make sure about this. I mean, Rosemary has said
the room is always going to be staffed with water department people. But you want somebody at the table. So that's the designee thing, right? We want Rosemary, or if she's not available, her designee at the table with you, following whatever the fine print says in terms of the deliberative stuff.
Sure.
Does this make sense?
Yeah.
Great. So, you lasted until 20 past 8. What's that? There was a gentleman who came and actually missed the public comment period. He was disappointed about that. But he said, I've got this, I'll hand it out.
This is Bill Finger.
What was his name?
Bill Finger. Yes.
So we said, sure, we can hand it out to the meeting members and they can take it home with them if they want. What we want to do before we end tonight is, because I'm thinking we've done enough work, right? Is make sure that we know what we're going to do tomorrow. So the agenda for tomorrow is we're going to start with the revisiting the work on the dialogue maps. I don't know where my agenda is. I put it down. Yeah, you can hand that around, and then can you pass that on? So I put down my agenda.
I do that all the time. You have to cut off their legs.
Thank you. So we're going to revisit the dialogue maps. The one thing we're going to do tomorrow is that we're going to kind of start early. So at 5:15, we're going to start at 5:30 nominally. 5:15, we're going to start. Carrie and I will be here to help people who want to add more to the dialogue maps.
And there'll be other ones.
Which one are we going to add?
We'll probably put the one about consultant hiring.
Ah, yes. Just to get you warmed up. So there'll be more stuff on the walls for you and for members of the public to write on. When we get going, the first thing we'll do is just sort of see what's happened to the dialogue maps, see what comments have been put up, and then we'll get back into the development of the charter. And the ones that we're going to do are 4, 7, and 12. Roman numerals. Yeah, 4, 7, and 12. I should check with you. Is that what you want to do? Because those are the ones that I thought were most important, that Carrie thinks is most important. Well, that's on the piece of paper that I can't find.
Four is roles and communications.
That's it.
Seven
is subcommittees, and 12 is elevation.
Elevation.
And by the way, when you're thinking about subcommittees, one thing that Nicholas and I skipped over, because we don't usually have chairs and co-chairs, it's in the charter, but we didn't put it as a start item. But when you think about the subcommittees, you might also think about the chair and co-chair idea, because in a way,
so, so we're getting down to the end here. Is there anything that you'd like us to take away with us to remember for our meeting tomorrow?
One of the things that somebody mentioned to me is that we do need to visit those pesky meetings.
Yes.
And we don't want to wait till the end. So can you do that tomorrow?
Bring your date books tomorrow, right?
For meeting
dates, yes. So we'll do that tomorrow. We could probably do that near the beginning, I guess, before we get sort of into it.
Yeah.
Bring your date books. Other stuff for tomorrow. Mark.
There was a gentleman, Mr. Pomeranz, I think, but I don't think he's here anymore, but he had asked if we could improve the acoustics somehow so he could hear.
That's right.
Would it be possible that this go there and that table go here so we're all facing the audience?
I'm
just wondering if we can rearrange the furniture to make it better.
Yeah. From time to time, it's important here to see the screen. That's the trouble.
But we could put some chairs here so that people who have hearing issues could...
Yeah, that's right. We could do that. We could do that.
That would probably be the way.
We want to engage.
Oh, sure.
We want to make sure people can hear us.
No, I'm just trying to work it out. I think it's a really good. I'm glad you brought it up, because otherwise we wouldn't have got to it until Friday night.
Could we just make two rows?
Yeah, that seems good.
Yeah, if we get these tables closer together, then there can be seats on them around.
So what you're saying is just dispense with the kind of crosswise tables and just have tables going up and down like this.
Well, then it's not so.
It's not so cozy and kind of collaborative, but what I'd like to do is try the idea of putting chairs down here, seating down here for members of the public, so you'll kind of be in the center of people and. Most people will try to sit down here and we'll have to figure that out. That's great. Thank you so much for bringing that up.
Well, one other thing. Thank you for the food.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Oh, there's lots of food left. Look at all this. So, you know,
tomorrow.
Let's have a social hour. what else do we need to do before we go? Yes, go ahead, Mark.
I won't be here for long. I have some other commitments.
Yeah.
So if I want to make comments about items 4, 7, and 12... Can I write them down and send them to someone? And can they be distributed, or does that screw things up? Or what? How does that work?
I don't.
Not that I have.
Is there a Brown Act thing that affects that?
You can send something to one other person who brings it to the meeting, so it never comes to public light. There's not a quorum that's disappeared. We haven't had a quorum discuss it. So pick somebody in the room you think would faithfully represent what you'd like to hear, have us know.
Okay.
And that's the way
so that's how you would communicate.
That's what I would recommend. There's no Brown Act problem with that, as long as that person doesn't share it with other people until they get to the open meeting.
That was actually what happened with Charlie and
Dave.
So that would be the thing to do. Find your sort of favorite person.
I always like to pick someone I disagree with, so you know that I get one more person that's heard me to say it.
Very devious. This guy is very devious.
But who has integrity?
Then I think we're ready to adjourn. Is there anything that we need to do before we go? Let's adjourn.
Just
Rick.
Well, you know, just appreciations for all the work that you've done to get us to this place.
Oh, thank you very much. Thank you very much for keeping going until far into the night.
We didn't get to use this beer.
Oh, no. Oh, for heaven's sake.
What is it?
You can do whatever you like with that.
Well,
is
it today?
Let's see. Can we, Heidi or Clark?
Yeah.
By the way, this is Clark, and Heidi have done so much of the heavy lifting on that preparation for the first year.
Thank you.
But can we leave some stuff here? I know we're supposed to clean the room. So give me these back.
What?
Oh. Unless, you know, you need to take them home to your kids.
What is this?
Model of play. And thank you.
Yeah, well done, everyone.
Good job.
Official permanent committee pens.
Well, I'll bring it back.
Yeah.
If you really think you'll remember spring,
yeah,
I'm a little
nervous.
Just general training. And we can leave all the people.
I'm sorry, I'm waiting for action.